It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannacco's here. He was at the Apple event. Lori Gill is also here from iMore. Adam Engst from Tidbits. We've got a lot to talk about. New Macs, new iPads, and a whole lot more next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 634, recorded Tuesday, October 30th, 2018. The new iPads are here. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by PayPal, your trusted payments partner for today and tomorrow. PayPal processes over 25 million payments a day. Visit paypal.com/growth to sign up for free and set up a business account right now. And by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. If you want a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/twit and use the code TWIT for 20% off. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple, and there's Mac news. We brought in the A-team. Actually, Renee Ritchie's in Brooklyn right now, so sitting in for Renee, managing editor at iMore.com, Lori Gill. Great to have you, Lori.
Thank you. I'm going to just go ahead and say Renee is now the B-team, and I'm the A-team, so he's out.
He's out. Thank God. Finally.
It's a coup.
I've been working on this for 2 years. I finally get the A spot.
He left town, and he's never coming back. Andy Iannacco is at the Apple event in Brooklyn. He's visiting a friend's studio to come to us today, which is nice. Thanks for being here, Andy.
Thank you. And Laura, I think that it is time for regime change. I really believe that iMore's readers will welcome you as liberators, as opposed to...
You can knock down that statue of Renee in the lobby, for one thing.
Renee, I sometimes forget how hard he works at these events. He's like, oh, if he's got a phone in his hand, he's capturing content somewhere of something.
Yeah.
So
he's playing Pokemon Go.
He has the iron.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Don't mention. Yeah, I was of course watching Renee's Twitter feed as we all were watching the event. Also with us from tidbits.com, Adam Engst. Hello, Adam.
Hey, everyone.
We got the people who were not at the event, except for Andy, who managed somehow magically
I have to say this one was easier because it started at 10 a.m. Eastern time,
yeah,
as opposed to Pacific. So, you know,
yeah, that's the 2 what you p.m. think.
Yeah, easier for you, not for us, right, Lori? We had to get up at
7. Yeah, that was real hard for me.
So,
I would also have to say that if this were an event I was attending on San Francisco, I'd probably have a hotel room that's only 10 minutes away, as opposed to having to ride Amtrak for 3.5 hours. And get into town at 3:30 and some time and all night diners and doing work. No, it was cool, but
Andy, we should mention for those of you listening, is on his AirPods, so that explains the. This it sounds a little bit distant, but that's all right. He's with us in spirit, and that's what counts.
Well, we're all here in spirit.
Who was excited when the very first words, practically out of Tim Cook's mouth, were Macintosh? Man, that made me happy.
You know, I have to say, it was an enthusiastic set of Apple executives and audience, much more so than normal.
Well, it was pretty clear, and I mentioned this during our broadcast of the stream, that the audience was loaded with Apple employees. And actually, once Angela Ahrendts took the stage and they started talking about Apple retail, the crowd really went crazy. So I'm guessing there were a lot of people from Apple retail in the audience.
Chills,
and it was a much bigger auditorium than they have in the Steve Jobs Theater, right, Andy?
About the same. It was a opera house on the Brooklyn campus, about two layers of mezzanine and a ground floor. I would guess a little bit less than 1,000 people.
Sounded like 10,000 when they
cheering. That's what you get. There's sometimes when your boss comes on stage, you are actually legitimately excited to see your boss on stage. You cheer pretty loudly. And there are a bunch of applause breaks that I didn't anticipate. When they're talking about how all the aluminum is reclaimed from shavings from other aluminum shaping processes, and so we have a MacBook frame that's 100% recycled. Yay! I think it actually took Apple off balance a little bit themselves.
The biggest cheers, though, as I said, were during the conversations about retail, and so I'm guessing that they. Yeah. Brought in a lot of retail employees. Apple does that. They want the audience to sound excited, enthusiastic. Journalists are famous for sitting on their hands, and I presume that's what most of the journalists were doing at the event today.
And or typing.
Yeah, you can't type when you're sitting on your hands. And I presume that however much their little hearts were going pit-a-pat, they didn't express that by cheering. But I have to say, internally, I was going, yeah, some love for the Mac. So let's go through the event from beginning to end in chronological order. There's more in the making. We saw more of the Apple custom logos. They sent out almost 400 in invitations, but many more, I guess, were used in the signage at the event, and I see some on the homepage as well. It's funny because the order of introduction on the homepage starts with the iPad Pro, but Tim started with the MacBook Air. And we were very glad to see a new MacBook Air, finally with a Retina display, although the same beautiful wedge design, a little bit thinner than the previous MacBook Air and a little bit more pricey. We were hoping, at least some were hoping, to get down to a $999 price point. I guess the 13-inch, the old MacBook Air is now $999, but if you want to get the Retina display, it's $1,199 to start. Or $1,399, depending on storage, because you don't get a choice, it looks like, in processor.
Nope, in processor.
Yeah, in every case, you're going to get an Intel 8th generation Y processor, which is, they're kind of low and slow mobile part, a dual core 1.6 gigahertz i5 that turbo boosts to 3.6. This is not, I have one in my Surface Go. It is not a notably speedy processor. The base model comes with 128 gigs SSD. Yeah, for $1,399, you get 256. And you can go all the way up to 1.5 terabytes if you've got enough money. 8 gigs of RAM standard, 16 gigs possible. And 50.3 watt hour lithium ion battery. They say about a little bit more battery life than before, about 13 hours of iTunes movie playback. On the iPad Air, MacBook
They were
Air.
Saying same amount of time for browsing the web, but for some reason, more time for the for movie
movies.
Going.
Yeah.
For iTunes movies specifically, though.
Oh, yeah.
They did point out iTunes movies.
Do you think that's key? I don't know.
I don't know, but they did point it out, which makes you think, well, maybe that, you know, if you try that with, you know, your Plex movies, it's not as good or something like that.
We'll have a review unit. These are orderable today immediately as you're listening to this. And if you order soon enough before supplies run out, which I doubt will happen, you'll be able to get it on Wednesday, November 7th. In fact, everything we talk about today, you can order now and get on November 7th.
Yeah, well, I think I certainly was a little bit waiting for, you're going to say first half of 2019 for the new Mac Mini. Oh, no, everything's on track. Everything's ready to go. But yeah, the new MacBook Air looks great. It looks like a really great update. It's still a 100% quality piece of kit. You also get the Touch ID. And you also get the T2 security chip behind it and all the other features that are in there.
Is it interesting that they're giving you Touch ID but they're not giving you the Touch Bar?
Touch Bar isn't going anywhere.
I think that's just because you can't put another OLED display in there and still make money off of such a cheap price point. They're practically giving these things away at the price they're giving it. But otherwise, all the things that are actually important, all the things you'd actually want. I actually would much rather have an escape key that is clickable, where it actually is. The Touch ID is also, it is in fact a clicky button. It has a sapphire top on it, but it's also the power button. So even that is not just simply a piece of glass that's immobile and infuriating. The display is wonderful. Of course, they had to swap out for a better display. It must be a problem of internal topology that they decided to put both both Thunderbolt ports on the same side of the device, as opposed to putting one on one side, one on the other. But as they did with the more expensive MacBooks. They didn't have one will only do power and won't do video. They're both pretty much the same in terms of capability. You can hook up a 5K display to one. It can't drive two 5K displays, but you are getting a fully flexible thing. It'll also run a GPU. It really does feel like a mini MacBook Pro, complete with the identical keyboard and all.
Well, and that's actually the interesting fact. I mean, while we were watching, everyone was, you know, kind of, we have a Slack, public Slack group, and everyone was following. And it was all very positive. And then when I sat down to actually write about it and started comparing to the other models, the 13-inch non-touch bar MacBook Pro is only $100 more and has significantly more performance. And the only real differences you get is the MacBook Pro is a bit heavier. It's a quarter pound heavier, and it doesn't have Touch ID. But it has a better Retina screen, and it has a faster processor. So it's a funny place in the lineup, actually.
Yeah, those, Andy, shouldn't be too sanguine until you get these. These Whiskey Lake Y processors are not great. I mean, this was the knock on the MacBook, which is this Core M processor. These Y processors are a similar kind of crap part, if you ask
and
me.
You'll notice that the when you read Apple's press release about this, they are very careful not to praise the performance. They just say it's you know performance for your everyday task.
Yeah.
They don't say how much faster it is than the old ones. And
yeah.
If they don't say that, it's not.
Oh.
Right. Thunderbolt 3 ports, that's a good news because they work for charging, DisplayPort, Thunderbolt, and USB-C. And because Mojave supports the eGPU, these don't come with GPUs, but if you had any GPU lying around for other reasons, I guess you could beef up at least the GPU on this. This is more like a MacBook in some respects than it is a MacBook Pro. It also... I should point out, it's going to use the new keyboard. So I know, Andy, you weren't crazy about Butterfly 2 keys.
Yeah, I did give it some typing tests today. It's is the latest generation the exact same thing they've got in the latest model of MacBook. So if you can deal with it, great. If you don't like it, then you're not going to like this one anymore.
I found I like the new MacBook Pro better than the old ones, and it's usable for me. Just a little bit of that, a little bit more travel, a little bit more cush. Lori Gill, are you rushing out to buy the new MacBook Air?
Well, only because I've already spent a lot of money on lots of other things. I am not going to get the MacBook Air. It doesn't fit what I do with my life. I don't need that version of that.
Do you use a MacBook by any chance?
I have a MacBook Pro and I have an iMac.
Not the super thin MacBook. We had MacBooks. Lisa, my wife, uses it. And she's really started to bemoan the lack of speed, especially when she's doing photos.
So that's what I think the Air is positioning itself to be, that sort of replacement for people that don't need quite the advanced processing speed as the Pro, but want an update from the Air. The Air's up until just now, the Air was kind of really sort of needed some dusting off. It was a little bit old, and the MacBook itself, it's fine, but this kind of it hybrids them into one. So you don't need to, you don't even need to get as advanced as the MacBook. You can get the MacBook Air, and it has a lot of the stuff that the MacBook already comes with. The things that were missing from the Air that some people might have thought was really something they needed that was missing from the Air, they can have that now, like Thunderbolt 3 ports. The updated trackpad, I think, is a really big deal with the larger larger size trackpad. I think that's going to be a real bonus for people using a new trackpad. That was for me when I went from an old MacBook Air to the new MacBook Air that had the larger trackpad. The difference was amazing. And I think that's going to be really nice for people upgrading. But this is definitely an upgrade from an Air model. This is not a downgrade from the Pro model. I have never owned
a
MacBook.
That's a good way to put it.
So,
yeah.
I've never owned a MacBook, so I don't know for sure whether this will feel like an upgrade or a downgrade. It might be a straight across the board switch over from MacBook to MacBook Air. Maybe somebody who has the MacBook would know a little bit more details on like how the tech wise or spec wise, whether or not they think that that's going to carry over in that way.
We'll have a head to head comparison for you next week because Lisa bought it. and she's going to compare it. And she said right away, I'm returning it if it's not appreciably faster than my MacBook. And I bet it, I mean, it'll be faster. Yeah. Ironically, the old MacBook Air had faster GPUs, CPUs available to it. You can get an i7 in the old MacBook Air.
Yeah. And faster clock speeds, too.
Yeah. Do you think, Adam, this is a replacement for the MacBook? You think we'll see a MacBook next year?
You know, so the thing that threw me was looking at Apple's comparison page afterwards and realizing they now have 6 laptops.
Yeah.
So, you know, keeping the 12-inch around, which I have never been a fan of the 12-inch, just a processor I couldn't believe, and a single USB-C port, not even Thunderbolt 3. Yeah. And why haven't they updated that or gotten rid of it, one or the other? And then keeping the old MacBook Air around with its, you know, the old ports and various, you know, non-Retina screen, again, just feels odd. You know, I understand that, you know, it's $200 cheaper, and I guess what I would have liked to have seen Apple do is introduce this new one at the $999 price point.
Yeah.
And I think everybody was hoping for that one. Yeah.
Right. And then just drop the old one. It's like, okay. And see, now you've got this thing where, geez, do I want the Thunderbolt 3 and the Retina display and the Touch ID and have to carry dongles? Or do I go back, you know, save $200 and get a lousy monitor? And I don't know. I'm just frustrated that Apple has made the decision even more confusing than it was before. And it was confusing before.
Andy, what do you think? Is it the end of the line for the MacBook, or are we going to see a new one in 2019?
MacBook seems like it's really well engineered to run on an ARM processor. So if that's part of the plan for the next 2 or 3 years, they may as well keep it limping along until they can introduce something new at the heart of it.
That's interesting.
It's hard to think about recommending someone get a MacBook as opposed to a MacBook Air, considering all the things you'll get, all the loving you'll get with these 2018 models, though. So, I mean, it doesn't have the performance, certainly, of a modern MacBook Pro. But if you the creature comforts that you might have been calling for, again, being able to have Thunderbolt ports, the ability to have Touch ID, and having a Retina display, and the ability to have something that is as thin and as light as possible, which, as I've said before more than a few times, that's a context in which this super, super skinny keyboard at least makes sense. When you're having something that makes the MacBook Pro look like a box of Whitman sampler chocolates, it's so thick compared to the MacBook Air. It certainly makes sense for that. So I wish that Apple would continue to have a sub-$1,000 MacBook that is useful, because the current MacBook Airs that they released today, it's at least within reach for someone who is going for a notebook. But it's not going to do a lot to convince someone not to get a Windows laptop. And if Apple can't convince these people to go for an iPad Pro instead, they're going to lose that sale.
Yeah, if you look at Huawei's MateBook, which a lot of people thought is what the MacBook Air should become, the MateBook Pro 10, MateBook X10, whatever it's called, Mate X10, is in most respects a superior product. The only difference is you got to run Windows on it. But the bezels are narrower. In fact, so narrow that they have to put the camera in the keyboard. it's a thinner, lighter, and it tops out at less expensive with bigger processors. I think in every respect, this is what people were hoping for from Apple with the MacBook Air. And of course, the irony of this is all of these Ultrabooks, including the MateBook, are based on the MacBook Air. I mean, they exist because the Air created this. Good news, though, for people who care about the planet and who don't want to pay tariffs on Chinese aluminum or Canadian aluminum or any kind of aluminum. This is all recycled aluminum, which is interesting, which saves, of course, a lot of energy. They said a 50% smaller carbon footprint, but also saves a lot of money because of aluminum tariffs. This and all the aluminum stuff, I think, is... Well, I should take that back. The aluminum in the iPads may not be that recycled aluminum. They're recyclable.
They didn't call it out specifically.
They're recyclable, not recycled. There's a difference. Yeah. But these Airs, I think, they're in small enough quantity that they can use entirely recycled aluminum for these.
Right. Also, 35% post-consumer recycled plastic in the internal components, like the speakers, 100% recycled tin in the logic board. So good. They're trying to look nice.
It looks greener, nice for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think using recycled aluminum is a good thing all around.
That's fine.
Yeah. All around. That's fine. We're going to there's more to say. More Macs, even. We'll get to that in just a second. Adam Engst from Tidbits is here. Andy Iannocco, he's in Brooklyn right now, just coming off the Apple event from WGBH in Boston. And Laurie Gill, who's managing editor at iMore.com. Our show today brought to you by PayPal. I don't think I have to tell you who PayPal is, right? When it comes to growing your business, PayPal is your payments partner for today and tomorrow. When we set up Twit, when we first wanted to take contributions way back in 2005, it was PayPal all the way. Take Linda, one of the first online consigners in the early days of internet auctions. She took her hobby of locating hard-to-find items and turned it into a thriving luxury consignment company called Linda's Stuff, selling first her kids' video games and her own clothes online. She used to be an attorney in New York City. She'd pretend to be in the library doing illegal research when instead she was following her bliss, hunting bargains. She turned her love for fashion into an empire, scaling her business from her kitchen counter to now, get this, a 93,000-square-foot warehouse and 100 employees. You go, Linda. Linda's Stuff, there's a lot of it. As a company specializing in high-end, previously owned goods, she knows reputation is everything. Integrity and trust are a critical part of how her company operates. Her business is family-owned. Her son joined the company 5 years ago, and they celebrate that family spirit with their employees. And from day one, you better believe it, Linda has trusted PayPal to help protect her business from fraud, even when selling internationally. Linda is proof positive that with hard work, the right tools and talent, you can grow your business. She's counted on PayPal every step of the way. So should you. With PayPal, your business will find more ways to grow, scale faster, expand to more channels with one payments partner that helps you sell to over 250 million shoppers across markets, across platforms, and, by the way, better conversions. PayPal's the most used digital wallet. On average, shoppers complete the checkout 88% of the time. That's a lot higher than the average. They trust PayPal. And, of course, you'll feel confident working with a partner that offers seller protection, readily available customer support, and fraud tools that get smarter with every transaction. And you can count on clear and straightforward pricing with no surprises. Explore how PayPal can help your business grow. Visit paypal.com/growth and sign up for free to set up a business account today. paypal.com/growth. One payments partner for today and tomorrow with paypal.com/growth. We thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. So I can't believe we got new Mac Minis. I know that was the rumor. We're going to get new MacBook Airs, new Mac Minis, but I didn't want to believe it because I didn't want to be disappointed. I was not. We have new Mac Minis, and I have qualms about the MacBook Air, but I have no question that these Mac Minis are what people like Alex Lindsay, and a lot of people who, including us, rely on the smallest Mac, wanted to see. This is very much a pro, and you get a better choice of processors all the way up to an 8th generation 6-core i7 CPU, faster memory up to 64 gigs, and I love the connectivity. And that, I think, kind of tells you something about how people use the Mac Mini. Full HDMI 2.0 port, two USB 3 ports, Type-A connectors, four Thunderbolt 3 ports, the Type-C connectors, Ethernet that can be upgraded to 10 gigabits, and a headphone jack. By the way, I should mention that the Air has a headphone jack too, thank goodness.
It's the worry that I had was that it was going to be one of those wish on a monkey's paw thing where I said, okay, congratulations, we've created a new version of the Mac Mini. We're calling it the Mac Mini Pro. It's the size of it's shaped like a stick. It has no ports. It has one blinking LED.
I have to say, when they showed the video, it looked like it was going to be round. And I thought, oh, God, they've made it round. No, it looks just like the old one.
it looks like pretty much anything that you might have asked for, saying, I don't care. Don't waste any time re-engineering the case. Don't make it round.
Right.
Don't make it the size of a Mac Mini. Just give us the Mac Mini with modern ports the ability to like turn this into a beast of a machine, as they said on stage there, and to make sure that it will run cool enough that we can stack them like pancakes. I was so impressed when they're showing pictures of someone using it in a rendering situation where you have 16 of them.
Yeah, that was something, wasn't it? Rack. Yeah.
And then like just stacked up in a big server farm. Clearly they knew how people like Alex and how most people outside of a home who use the Mac Mini, why they love these things.
I think this is
what I wanted to see.
This is an example of Apple actually thinking about their customer and making sure that they were catering to the customer. I think we hear a lot about Apple not really kind of catering to the MacBook Pro users. And now it sounds like there's going to be a lot of, you know, what's up with the MacBook Air? Who is this for kind of stuff. But with the Mac Mini, they kept it the right size. They gave it all kinds of good advanced guts. They made sure that there was plenty of ports for people to use. They thought about what Mac Mini users do, and they stuck with that. They didn't try to give you more. They didn't try to nerf it. They made it exactly what Mac Mini users wanted to be. So I applaud them for not trying to appeal to a wider audience here. They kept with their niche audience with this one.
Only one color, that's that iMac Pro Space Gray, and that's kind of another kind of signaling that this is the Pro Mac Mini. $799 for the quad core 3.6 gigahertz i3, and a pretty low end there. Go up to an i5 with 6 cores for $1,099, and you can go all the way up to an i7 in both configurations. But it will cost you. Should we max out? I'm just curious.
I do this all the time.
I love to max. We'll start with the $1,099. We'll upgrade the processor a little bit to an i7 3.2 gigahertz 6 core. I want to put in all 64 gigs of RAM. By the way, that extra RAM is going to cost you $1,400. You can get a 2 terabyte hard drive in there as well. And, you know, most people couldn't take advantage of 10 gigabit Ethernet. But thanks to SonicNet, we actually have 10 gigabit internet in our premises. So I'm going to check that box. I do already own Final Cut and Logic, so I'm going to save a little money on that. Totals $4,199. You can get a $4,000 Mac Mini if your checkbook can support it. Wow. Most people, obviously, and I didn't. We did buy one. I think we went to 16 gigs of RAM, and we stuck with a minimum 256 gig storage. That's plenty. And a simple gigabit Ethernet port. That's $1,299. That's actually not a bad price. We're going to use it as an adjunct computer in for our TriCaster for things like FaceTime, because I want to do 32 of you in FaceTime. So I think this is for people who use it in render farms. It will work with the eGPU, which is great. Because it doesn't have a GPU built in an external GPU of any kind, or discrete GPU of any kind. This looks like the Mac Mini that they should do.
I was really pleased that it's rare that Apple makes a machine that is clearly intended for people who are buying this machine today,
yep,
as opposed to we're leading you into the future. This is, in 3 years, every single person is going to be using a computer like this. But for the next 2 years, if you buy one, it really is going to bite pretty hard because you're not going to have the ports you need. But think how wonderful you'll be in 2 years from now. That this was the case of, we know what our users want. We've decided to just give them a simple, practical machine, yes, that won't get in the way of however they want to deploy them.
Yes. There is a little bit of the future both in the MacBook Air and the Mac Mini that I want to call attention to. That's the T2 chip. Both of them have the T2, which first debuted in the iMac Pro and has appeared in the 2018 MacBook Pros. Ostensibly, this is the chip for the Touch ID and the Secure Enclave. It drives the touch bar, but notice neither of these computers have a touch bar. In fact, this computer has a T2, but doesn't even have a fingerprint reader. I think the T2 is, and this is what I said on our broadcast, the camel's nose under the tent for getting ARM into Macintosh. These are ARM-like chips designed by Apple, and these are, in effect, dual-chip computers. They use the T2 for encrypting the hard drive in real time for security. I might also point out that at some point they could use the T2 to prevent Hackintoshes, because I wouldn't be at all surprised to see at some point macOS, for security reasons, understand, checking for a T2 chip.
Yeah, it also and means repair. That they can do. It also means they can do the Hey Siri on these new machines where they couldn't do, they couldn't have done otherwise. They also make a point about how they do a lot of video encoding with it. It's a real jack of all trades machine.
I do feel like this. I expect that Apple, in I'm going to say as soon as this June at WDC, will start moving developers towards ARM, or not ARM, but Apple designed chips.
Yeah,
I think maybe we'll see just a class in Xcode that says, here's how to write software that is completely CPU independent.
Yes.
So that if we do something, or rather, here are mistakes that we can't tell you why. We don't want you to make these mistakes. But if you stop making these mistakes now, it means that you can do something really cool in just 2 hours worth of work in 2 years instead of having to rebuild everything from scratch. Right.
So the thing that struck me about the T2 chip is that it is showing up in every new Mac that's significantly designed. MacBook Pros, or it started the iMac Pro, the iMac MacBook Pro, at least MacBook Pros, and now these last two. And so that's what we had sort of wondered what was going to happen with the Touch Bar back when Apple first introduced the Touch Bar. Would we see it expanding across the entire lineup? And it didn't happen. The Touch Bar hasn't shown up anywhere else, whereas the T2 chip just keeps popping in. And so, I think that's an interesting fact. It's got to cost them something to put the T2 chip in, but clearly that's something that Apple feels is completely worthwhile to build into every new machine as they redesign the motherboard.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, you can't right now say, you can't run Mac OS without a T2 chip. There's too many older Macs that don't have a T2 chip, but it's. I don't think it's any accident at all that every Mac they've announced in the last year has had a T2 chip, and I think all going forward will. And then at some point, that gives them the ability to pull that trigger and say, you need a T2 chip to run Mac OS.
I think it's mostly security, though.
Well, that's security. right?
But it's definitely an advantage that they can't, that they will prevent people from interfering with the BIOS.
Right.
And doing their own secure boot. But it also means that it'll interfere with bad people interfering with other people's BIOSes to compromise their system.
Yes.
And
that's Apple, a benefit.
It's a religion at Apple. Security and privacy is a religion, as well as a really good marketing point.
Right. And as Roland points out in the chat room, they don't have to have an SSD controller anymore. They can have raw flash memory and use the T2 to control it. That's a benefit. There's a lot of benefits to the T2. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. So the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air. Hallelujah. We got new Macs.
So one quick thing before we go on. What do people know about the i3 chip? I've never heard of the i3 before. It hasn't been used in any Macs before.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, it's widely used in Windows machines as a cheaper chip. And I think it's a binned, basically it's probably a binned i5. It's just a cheaper i5. It may be that Intel is disabling cache or changing the amount of cache available. It's a cheap i5, and it's really Intel makes it for the low cost Windows machines.
All right.
So it is interesting. I'm really surprised to see an i3, frankly, in these Mac Minis.
I guess the question then is does that where the pricing, that was how Apple got it down to $799, and $799 is still a lot more than the Mac Mini used to be. I mean, Mac Mini used to be at $499 to start back when.
In the most recent Mac Mini, $699, right?
So
that is an interesting.
It's a pro machine, but it's also a pro price,
right?
And you're not going to be just buying one of these to run a home media server in quite the same way because of how much you're going to spend for it.
It's an interesting question. I wonder if they see some users that don't need the multi-threading, that don't need the extra cache, that an i3 would be adequate for. I'm not sure. Well, for us, it would be, right? Because we're just going to use this for FaceTime.
Yeah, there are a lot of use cases like that. Every time I open up, every time I'm shown a system cabinet, like at a TV station or a radio station, and I see that they've got whatever proprietary blades that they've got running everything, but they will also have one Mac Mini in there just acting as a front end so they can virtualize and control everything with a really good user interface. So if someone needs to buy a bunch of these for that kind of thing, $100 is $100. And let's also not ignore that it is the right now it's still the cheapest buy-in for someone who wants to get a Macintosh somewhere inside their house, because Apple's never going to do an $800 MacBook. iMacs are they feel as though they have to put into a wonderful display, so those are always going to be kind of premium price things. But if you've got an old HDMI TV around, if you've got a USB keyboard and a mouse somewhere, $799 can give you a Macintosh in the house, and I still think that that's kind of an important thing for Apple to do.
Yeah, i3 does have multi-threading. It's really, I think it's just a question of less cache and slower clock speeds than anything else.
So I will say, though, you look at the iMac pricing on the 21.5-inch iMac, the non-Retina one is $1,099.
Right.
And it starts, the next one up is $1,299. So all of these machines are showing up at like this $1,299 price.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apple, it actually is fairly difficult to choose between them on price, because they all are within $100 one way or another.
That's kind of a change. We used to be able to say that Apple's pricing performance curve was kind of very, very clear, and you get more when you pay more. But that isn't quite the case now.
I don't understand that it's the $800 Mac Mini, and again, you're not necessarily going to go out to Best Buy and buy an extra monitor.
Right.
You can plug it into something you already have.
Right.
That's what I mean about the minimum buy-in. If you don't necessarily want to buy a display, don't necessarily want to buy a keyboard and a mouse, just give me what I need to be able to run Mac OS.
Right. i5 has more cache. I don't think the i3 has turbo boost. It does have hyper threading. It's very, you know, and Intel hasn't helped make any of this clear at all. All right. I know why, after he started talking about the iPads, I realized why they led with the MacBooks. If you did the Macintosh after the iPads, it would have been very depressing. Because really, all the speed, all the power, all the focus is clearly headed towards iPad. iPad Pros are much faster. I think they're probably faster than the MacBook Airs at this point.
They did say that it has a faster graphic speed than like 92% of all computers
They said more than once, they said at least twice, that the iPad Pros are faster than 92% of the laptops sold this year.
92%. Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I don't know if that's by volume, I don't know what that is, but or by price.
All portable PCs.
Yeah.
Remember that these things go way, way down.
Yeah.
However, we have seen benchmarks
on the iPhone XS that say it's faster than a MacBook in many cases. I think this is, I came away with a very strong feeling that this is the beginning of the end of Intel for Apple. That really, that's what this whole announcement presaged for me. Is the beginning of the end for Intel?
I don't think I agree. I could definitely see them putting their own ARM processors in consumer grade machines. Like, there'll be a level of MacBook Air, there'll be a level of Mac Mini, there'll be a level of iMac that has their own custom chips in it. I don't know if Apple can produce the sort of chips that have the performance of the highest performance Intel chips.
Yeah.
I don't know when that's going to happen. That's why I find it difficult to believe that they will ever do a complete turnover of their chip line. But it definitely has some advantages to have an ARM chip somewhere in a Mac, somewhere in the product line.
Well, they started off talking about the A12X Bionic, which is even better than the A12 Bionic in the new iPhones. This is a chip with the 7-nanometer process, the first, you know, mass production 7-nanometer chip. I think they're getting these from TSMC. And I have to point out, Intel hasn't even gotten to 10 nanometers yet. Admittedly, I don't think you're going to see a 265-watt Xeon-class processor in an iPad at any point. And I know you're not. No mobile device would have anything like that. But I do feel like they're really positioning these as beasts in terms of performance. Let's start, though, with the form factor, because that's a big change, and much is expected. They did. There's two ways you can take advantage of these narrower bezels. You can get more screen on a device of the same size. That's what they're doing with the 11-inch iPad Pro. Or the same screen on a smaller size, and that's what they did with the 12.9. It's got the same screen size and resolution as the old iPad Pro 12.9, but on a form factor, they say, about the size of an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. And I have to say, I bought a 12.9 when it first came out, and it did feel a little big for me. I actually ended up giving that to an employee because it just, but if you can get it down to the size of a piece of paper, that might be pretty usable.
And it's not just the size of a piece of paper. The fact that they've removed all that glass and all that aluminum, it feels so light.
Oh, you
in
felt
the hand.
It. Yeah. Tell us about it.
I mean, it really almost felt like a prop. It felt like a hollow shell of plastic compared to the 12.9-inch iPad Pro that I've had for the past 2 or 3 years. The hard edges are a big win. For some reason, it just feels like it kind of sits in your hands a little bit better. I had to remind myself this was still a 12.9-inch iPad Pro for all that meant. I think a lot of people, once they pick it up, they're going to say, I would much rather have the same size screen and a much lighter device than anything that I've been using for the past couple of years.
How did the screen look? It's not OLED, it's Retina, the same liquid Retina Apple's been touting on the iPhone XR.
Yeah, it looks great to me. I couldn't really see any problems with it whatsoever. Super dense, really good blacks, really good contrast, no blowouts in any of the colors and reds. I was kind of trying to find a way to make it cry a little bit, but nope, it looked perfectly fine to me. I like the rounded corners. Those are pretty nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tell us about that. So it's squared out. Yeah, that's okay. So rounded corners on the screen, which is odd. If you look at previous iPads, the screen is clearly square. They're just masking them off, though, right? It's got to be a square screen.
No, I think that they actually have shaped the display to have rounded corners.
What is the advantage of rounded corners on a screen?
Aesthetics.
Cool.
Besides cutting off content, what is the advantage, right? Cutting off that last letter on the page, what is the advantage? None. It's aesthetics.
It just looks.
Okay.
But when it looks
this good.
Hey, Steve likes rounded corners. We're going to keep doing rounded corners.
Yeah. Let me just say, since we're talking about it, I love this. I love those rounded corners flat. I like that. I love the form factor that's on the iPhone 5S or 5S or the iPhone SE. It's also the 5 and the 5S. I like it. And so the fact that Apple is doing this with the design of the iPad, I am on board with it big time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've seen them on the iPhone, so it only makes sense. And then they took the aluminum body, and now it's squared off. It's not rounded anymore. How did that feel, Andy?
It feels great. I don't know why, but the fact that you have this corner nestling into your hand instead of having this rounded off edge to it feels really, really good. Aesthetically, just as a device on the table, the fact that it doesn't have this fake curve that's trying to trick into thinking that it's a lot thinner than it actually is. It just feels like a more substantial thing without making it any heavier whatsoever. The only thing that's kind of weird is that as far as I know, they didn't make any radical changes to the camera, but to make it that thin and to keep with that design, they did have to have a camera bump.
There's
out
a bump. Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
There is a bump. You don't really notice it, but it was an interesting choice. The pogo pins for the keyboard are in a different place now. They're now like kind of like attached to the back of it. There's a little like magnetic cue. There's a magnet on the side of it, so you can actually see where the new pencil clips into, and the pencil snaps onto that really, really tightly, so it doesn't feel like it's going to fall off anytime. But overall, just as a shape, I just really, really liked it a lot. Not just for the weight of it, but just the way that it sits on a desk, the way that it sort of sits in your hand. And the new pencil is 10 times worth of fabulous, or at least for the 20 minutes that I was playing with it.
So in the video, we're reading tea leaves here. So I want to get your input. In the videos, you can see here on the edge, on the bottom edge, there's something that looks like, I don't know what, an SD card slot.
That's a magnet.
That's a magnet. And is that the top? So that's the magnet for the pencil. Is that what that is?
Right.
Yeah.
The pencil, not only does it click in there, but it will also do wireless charging once it's magnetized in there. It's really cool. Once you click it on top there, it actually, from that edge of the screen, a little indicator sort of drops down saying Apple Pencil battery level 62% or whatever, and then silently rolls back up again.
I really like that. I never thought it was aesthetically pleasing to stick the pencil into the Lightning port.
It was such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Such a bad idea. Yeah.
It looked like it was going to break instantly.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people had accidentally broken it off.
Of course.
There's no way that wouldn't have.
It also means we've eliminated the easily lost cap to protect the Lightning connector.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Everything about it is just, and even if all they did to update this pencil was, number one, get rid of that cap. Number two, flatten one side of it so that it no longer rolls off the table. Mm-hmm. Which is another thing that it does. And also, it's no longer glossy. It has a sort of like a satiny, not, I wouldn't say rough, but it's not a glossy sort of feel to it. And to say nothing, the fact that now it is the size of a pencil. It isn't this weird, super long shape that you can't stick in any pen holder that's inside your laptop bag without sticking out like an aerial antenna.
Yeah.
Just all these things feel so good in the hand. And the fact that you now have a tappable area on it will just make it so much more fun, so much more easy to use.
How do you like the screen
of the iPad?
Yeah,
absolutely solid. I really couldn't see any difference between this screen and the screen that I've been using for the past couple of years. I think that I don't know what you'd have to do to make a panel like that look bad. It certainly looked perfectly fine to me.
Yeah. And the lack of bezels, did that make it feel like it was all screen? It's not quite all screen. There's still
no. I think, yeah. You know what? I was gonna bring that up when you were talking about the Huawei device. I think that you need to have a little bit of bezel there, because not only are you going to be holding it, but at some point you have to sort of reach over and pick it up.
Right.
And giving you sort of a visible safe zone is just reassuring, and it just makes absolute sense.
I agree.
How much is the bezel? Like, what is that? How much is it? Like a half an inch or three quarters of an inch?
Quarter inch?
I would say about a half an inch, a little bit less than that.
That's
not a quarter inch, but yeah.
So then the bottom doesn't have pogo pins anymore. It looks like a microphone. Right. It's got I presume a Ray mics for Siri. So you said the pogo pins are on the back now.
Right, it's on the back surface on the bottom.
The smart connector.
Four pins. Yeah, the smart connector for the keyboard.
Well, we were going to have to redesign those anyway for a different form factor, but now you know you'll have to absolutely have to have a different.
It really does. I had no complaints ever about having a home button on my iPad Pro, but now I think even more than on the new iPhones, taking it off of the iPad just seems like such a brutally honest and simple and natural thing to happen, because now you just have nothing but screen. You have nothing but user interface. You have nothing but content. And it looks pretty nice.
They're doing, of course, the True Tone as they did before with the iPad Pros and True Motion, 120 frame per second. In fact, they showed Assassin's Creed Rebellion with 120 frame per second. Not all games will do that, but that one did. And they had to have a little bezel because they've got a Face ID camera. And it's in the – is this in the portrait edge, the short edge of it?
It would be opposite side of the USB-C port, I believe.
Okay.
So if you want to call that the top, but it will work in multiple orientations.
Yeah, what is the top? And that's what's cool is they had said with the iPhone, we can't do – vertical orientation or horizontal orientation. Now they can. Now it doesn't matter how you hold the iPad in every orientation.
Did anybody tell you how they were able to make that work in iPad Pro versus why they couldn't make that work in iPhone?
Nope.
Yeah. It's the H12 by X Bionic.
Yeah, right? I can't wait to find out the details.
Did you try it, Andy? Did you try it from all the different orientations?
I did not try Face Unlock, and they weren't offering to have someone who had trained for it to do it. So I'm sure it works, but yeah. But it seems to work pretty okay the way that it goes.
I was actually a little intrigued that the iPad Pro had Face ID, but the MacBook Air did not. It's the same thing where like, oh, the bezel gets really small, and you're thinking, oh, is there room up there for a camera? And then yes, there is. They've got the FaceTime camera on the MacBook Air, but clearly, again, Face ID not the thing they're necessarily going for everywhere. Yeah, they added Touch ID.
If you're adding Face ID, then you're charging another $100 for the MacBook Air, which people are already complaining about the price. So I'm sure that had something to do with why they decided not to do that technology.
Although the iPad Pro, again, the price there is actually pretty cheap. I mean, I was expecting those to be more expensive than they ended up. So
because this is the future of Apple, I'm going to say it again. This is charge more. I'm just $799 for the 11-inch based on 64 gigs of storage. By the way, no more 32 gigs SKU, yeah. Thank God. 12.9-inch will start at $999. And, of course, if you decide you want to get more storage, you can. Silver and space gray, the storage choices range from 64 gigs all the way up to a terabyte. we're getting more and more PC like on these things. These really, you know, they say faster than most laptops. You've got a lot of storage.
Even the way Apple designed the page that you're looking at is more similar to the way purchasing a MacBook or a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air looked. Yeah. As soon as I clicked on that page, I almost for half a second thought, did I accidentally click on one of the MacBook pages? Because even the way they designed the page looks different.
Wi-Fi plus cellular, a premium of $150 now for a cellular. It used to be $129. And then Apple Care, of course, you always want to get that. What's in the box? A Type-C charging cable. They show one end. I presume the other end. Wait a minute. There's no power adapter in the box?
No, you get an 18-watt USB-C power adapter.
Oh, there it is.
It would probably be a USB-C to USB-C.
18-watt USB-C to USB-C. There you go.
And big, big bonus. This is one of the coolest things you can do with USB-C. You can actually use the iPad to charge your phone. So it's got this big Wampum battery in it. When you plug in a rechargeable device that knows how to do that with USB-C.
Two-way charging. Love that.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's like you're already carrying this huge battery charger anyway.
Why not move
some of those electrons where they can actually make you some money?
Did you ask if you could use a USB-C for a monitor or for an eGPU or other devices? What can that USB-C port do?
It can be used for a monitor. I didn't ask for eGPU. I would guess no. I actually didn't even bother asking.
Yeah, I bet not because that's for Intel.
I don't know if they'd be support for that, but they did. Yeah. But they did say that you can use it for an external monitor. It's weird that you got to give Apple a little bit of credit, given that now you can just have a simple cable that connects your camera, for instance, to your iPad Pro. They've made the first dongle-less device that's in the lineup for the past like 10 years. You can't leave the house without a dongle if you've got a MacBook, but if you've got an iPad, if you just got a camera cable, if you just got a cable with the connectors at both ends, you're good.
That's a good point. Yeah, three array microphones, speakers in all four corners, and they said tweeter and woofer in all four corners. Did you hear? Did you try the sound? Is it noticeably different?
That was really, really loud. It was really, really loud in that spot. Yeah. And also it was like reverberation. So yeah. I did play something, but I really didn't notice one way or another.
You can't tell.
So my question is with the external monitor is what happens? Is it just mirroring or do the apps somehow get to control what the external display is used for? Obviously, you can't just touch the monitor.
I would assume that it would work exactly the same way as when you've got like an external VGA or HDMI connector on an existing iPad. There's some apps that will treat it like a Keynote treats that as a separate display with the user interface on the regular panel. I think there are video editors that will use that for playback. There are different solutions for it.
Do note, though, that Duet and other external monitor solutions with the iPads stopped working fairly recently. I wonder if there'll be a Duet-like capability which would allow me to use my iPad as a second display for a MacBook. That would be an interesting thing. Mm. We need some sort of Apple
Mac. You hook it up via USB-C, what happens?
Yeah, that's the problem with USB-C. You never know.
Well, maybe it would sync through iTunes.
Yeah, who knows?
That definitely won't work.
No.
it would be super wonderful if you could plug this iPad in and use it as an external display. It would be doubly cool if there was an API so that Adobe could basically extend the user in a touch interface for Photoshop to mix and blend colors, or even just use it as a Wacom tablet with the Apple Pencil.
Were you blown away by that Photoshop demo, man? The way that she was scrolling through layers, then the augmented reality with Arrow. That's another, measure of how much desktop power this has.
Yeah, and especially they had 2K Sports doing a demo of the NBA 2K game, where it's like you see an arena full of people, and it's not just a painting of people in mid clap. There are people who are actually standing up and cheering.
Every fan different, they said.
And not only these players are almost outside of the uncanny valley. They're just like climbing their way up out of it because they're so close to being realistic. But nonetheless, to give them more credit, like you look at the texture of the wood on the basketball court, where it's shiny, like it's like a varnished wood, but it also has that sort of texture of like a gameplay surface on it. And so, and this is all being driven from an iPad. And this is me just simply repeating a marketing thing that the marketing person during this marketing event said during the demo. But he said that this is performance that we were unable to get on any other mobile platform. This is truly console level performance. And I will simply say, looking at it in front of me, I absolutely believed it.
Yeah. Yeah, they compared it to an Xbox One.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Well, but, it's interesting because Apple and the iPhone particularly, but has really become the king of casual gaming. But this is taking on the king of hardcore gaming. And I think it might be, they've got the power. They've got the screen.
As was discussed in our community, was that still no controller. You're still on
a
glass screen.
Well, you can use one, can't you?
So
you could use a controller.
Well, that's the question, USB-C controller. Will that work?
Oh, well, there are made for iPhone.
Few.
Bluetooth controllers.
There are. Yeah. Bluetooth isn't quite as... issue of lag. The latency might actually be an effect. Though there are some fantastic quality USB... Or sorry, Bluetooth gaming pads that are gamer level. So there's a possibility. I would argue though, I hope that the gamers out there don't hate me for this. I don't think this is ever gonna. I don't think the iPad will ever be a gamer device. It's not a dedicated gaming device. It's an iPad.
Tablet.
It competes
with the Switch at this point, right? Which would you rather play Fortnite on?
It competes, but I don't see a lot of game developers spending the time necessary to turn their, their top tier games into gaming.
Fortnite makes $1 million a day on iPhone and iPad.
Yeah,
there's some incentive.
Minecraft is another huge money making game, but these are. We're not talking about Red Dead Redemption 2 here. I don't think game companies are going to spend a lot of time porting these really big, really advanced games onto the iPad. And therefore, I don't think the iPad is ever going to really make a name as being a gaming console. It'll be an iPad. It already is a tablet that you can do amazing gaming on, but it will never become a replacement for your Xbox or your PlayStation or something like that. I really don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because it was an impressive demo just showing exactly how quickly this machine could render these graphics and put them on the screen and do so interactively. The question is, the people who really, really want that level of performance, do they want to do it on a machine that they hold up like this and do like that with? Or do they want that to be on their big 4K display in the middle of the living room? Do they want to be able to do it with their friends? in the room, or they want to be able to do it with network connectivity, as opposed to just sitting on the subway with their iPad Pro, working with it that way. But the level of performance that it was at least demonstrating in all of this, between the Photoshop demo and the game demo, was it's just nothing like what you're getting for the same amount of money, or even more money, in the Windows tablet space.
I think it might surprise you. I would not. I would be the last person to bet against AAA gaming on an iPad. But we'll see. Okay. You know, you're right, Laurie. If the developers don't do it, then it's not going to happen. But I think the form factor objections can be overcome. It's mobile. I mean, it's portable. The DS sells quite well.
Sure does.
Yeah.
It is a bespoke device. It's designed specifically to be no copy. You get the controllers built into it, and it's a really cool form
that's
factor.
I think the controllers are going to be the thing, and that Type-C port is incredibly capable and much more capable than a Lightning port, much more universal than a Lightning port. I could see no reason why you wouldn't see Type-C based controllers.
It's going to be so cool to see what kind of hardware comes out when people don't have to kowtow to license this special proprietary connector from Apple.
Yes.
And they could just simply create a USB device, a USB-C device, that will just fit into that plug.
You already brought up, you could connect it right to your camera. Although I don't see a lot of cameras with Type-C yet, but I imagine they'll all have Type-C down the road.
Well, but matter of fact, in my bag right now, I've got a Type-C to micro USB.
That's true.
Connector,
right.
So that
right.
I can hook this up to my camera.
Right.
So it's just cool to be have, and it's just really cool to have one cable. Not I have to plug it into an adapter, plug the adapter into this, because sooner or later that adapter is going to go missing. But I have less likelihood of losing that one cable that I need.
I thought it was interesting that it sounds like they've put a pretty good camera itself into this. They're mentioning smart HDR. It's f1.8. I don't know if this is the same as the iPhone XS wide angle, but it sure seems pretty close.
And wasn't the neural engine part of the way they got smart HDR?
Yeah, and they have a hefty neural engine in the Bionic A12X.
You could tell the picture, it was a big neural engine.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was bigger than the CPU, it looked like, in the cross-section. 4K video recording at 60 frames a second. They've slow-mo support for 1080p at 120 frames, 720p at 240 frames. Cinematic video stabilization. I don't know what that means. That sounds like it's software-based. Autofocus video. Do you know, Andy, is this the same camera as in the iPhone?
I was told that it wasn't a big improvement, that it was substantially the same as what Apple has put into current iPhones. When I was mostly talking about why is there that camera bump now? Is it because you've done something that's substantially different? Is there something, a next generation, anything? And I was told that, no, it was it was basically how they could get what they needed to do to get the camera that they were going to put in anyway into that form factor.
It looks just like the camera bump on my iPhone.
But big. It's a big wart.
Yeah. Well, this is the 10R. It looks the same on the 10R.
Yeah.
I mean, the only drawback is that you can't lie your iPad down flat anymore.
Well, yeah. I don't know if that's a problem, though. I mean, how many times do you have I can't think of a time where I had the thing flat on a table and was actually interacting with it, as opposed to it's there because I put it down and I'm going to pick it up later.
Right.
How does the smart keyboard folio intersect with the camera?
It must have a cutout.
Yeah.
Didn't it cover the back?
No. It's a folio sort of thing. And so it just connects magnetically with the four Pogo pins in the back. So it's not going to cover up the back of the camera.
It's
got a nice big hole.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So that will be your flat partly.
Yeah. That's right. That should lie flat. Yep. Yeah, I immediately ordered the folio so that I'd have front and back protection and a keyboard. And that, I'll tell you what, you add that, I'm not talking about price. Let's ignore price for the moment. But you add that, I feel like that iPad Pro, especially the 12.9, you've got a laptop computer now.
So will you be able to plug a mouse in via USB-C?
Good question. Why not?
You're gonna plug it in.
What happens?
You need drivers, obviously. And, yeah, whether Apple
it'll
puts drivers. Do you need a mouse though with touch?
You know, one of the reasons why I got this Pixelbook C is because I kind of wanted to play some more with a mobile operating system that's truly within like a laptop form factor, just like this. And I do have to say that there are times where you really are in laptop sort of work mode. And I love my Logitech K811 keyboard that I usually travel with, but it's not the same as simply being able to open it up, put it on the table and start going. It's take it out of the bag, take my folding stand out of the bag and unfold it, press a button so that Bluetooth will find it and connect to it automatically. And the ability to never have to reach up to a screen to touch when you don't want to and simply always have a trackpad underneath your thumb, that's what lets you more easily get through 8 hours worth of work with a keyboard than I could with an iPad. But this isn't a Chromebook. It isn't Windows 10. It is an iPad. And for the quality of the software library you're getting in the iPad, that's not a huge trade-off. I mean, you're not going to miss it. Whereas I've only used this for about a week, and my MacBook Pro is broken, and so I have to do a whole bunch of stuff to like get this being a Skype thing and using this for notes. And I could have just taken this Chromebook with me because it does have Skype, but the version of Skype is sort of this weak version that really doesn't do very much whatsoever. So I could plug a microphone into it, but I couldn't actually control it or use it. Whereas I could have actually just taken my iPad Pro and used that because that will support external microphones, and the software that's written for it is of such a professional standard that it really does try to be as good as a desktop equivalent. And you just absolutely can't get that on Chrome OS. You, to a large extent, can't even get it on Windows. You have to start treating this Windows tablet as though it's a Windows laptop to get that kind of software library. So Apple is absolutely 100% on the mark when they are marketing this $1,000 tablet as the equivalent of a $1,000 Windows laptop or a $1,000 Microsoft Surface device. Because it's because of the quality of the software that you can get. Absolutely the best professional mobile library you can get anywhere.
I feel like that if you got the Folio, it's very – you're opening up. There's a keyboard. Yeah. Now, it doesn't have a trackpad, but isn't it the case that you can smush the keys? Am I wrong and use it as a trackpad?
I like the idea that you're just smushing the keys to make that happen.
You can with the on-screen keyboard. You know, if you press and hold on the on-screen keyboard, it becomes a trackpad. I think it's the same with the physical keyboard. I might be wrong.
I've noticed that on the old one anyway.
I might be wrong on that.
But there are a lot of keyboard shortcuts and keyboard commands to navigate a cursor throughout a text field. So it's not as though you're always reaching out to touch.
Apparently I know exactly what you mean, though, Andy. I can't count the amount of times where I was using my iPad Pro 12.9 inch. It feels, if you have the right keyboard especially, it really feels like you're using a MacBook. And I would try to use a trackpad that's not there. Oh, that's right. And I'd have to reach up. Your brain is just working in that capacity. Yeah. Yeah. And if a trackpad keyboard for an iPad would be
fantastic.
Wouldn't
that be interesting?
Yes.
Yeah. And there's also this matter here. I couldn't have possibly sat in the Opera House with something in my lap and typed and typed and typed for an hour and a half. I've tried to do that with folding iPad keyboards like the one that you just bought, but at some point you just adjust your shin a little bit and it collapses, or the keyboard starts bending in a really, really weird way. So you'd have to get that really cool, what's the name of that keyboard that has the beautiful like flat almost aluminum flat platter with two like hinge mounts?
The bridge keyboard. That's the one. Yeah, I use the bridge keyboard with my 12.9 inch just because it actually makes it feel like a MacBook and it doesn't fall over as soon as you shift. Yeah.
Hmm.
A lot of little details.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really work for a living, so I can't. I don't know. But I feel like that. I certainly, given, and I have a Surface Go, the little Surface. given the choice going out the door between a Surface Go and an iPad Pro, I'd pick the iPad Pro every single time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that has a track. Surface Go has a trackpad. Yeah, I wonder what. No trackpad there. Well, I guess there's no mouse pointer, so a trackpad would be of limited use.
The comment that I heard also from some people is they just feel like they have fat fingers. And for certain kinds of things, you need pretty precise positioning.
That's what the pencil's for.
Yeah, so I have a 10.5-inch iPad Pro with a pencil and a keyboard, smart keyboard. Never use the pencil. It just doesn't happen. Yeah. Sort of a nice idea, but doesn't happen.
That's why I've never lost my pencil or the pencil cap. It's safely ensconced where it's never going to get used. Yeah.
I will say the smart keyboard, and I'm presuming the new smart keyboard Folio, it looked very similar, is surprisingly good. I'm a bit of a keyboard snob, and I think that Apple did a shockingly good job with what is a funny keyboard, you know, frankly, with the textured keys and everything like that. And it holds really well, you know. I mean, it's not as solid as a MacBook would, but, you know, I've never really had a trouble using it. What little I do on a lap, I frankly mostly don't work in my lap because I'm not a big fan of that ergonomics there. But
one advantage the Surface has is, you know, the smart keyboard and all the keyboards for iPads have one angle of incidence.
Yeah.
And
well, this has two now.
This has two?
Yeah, this has two. They showed very specifically you got two.
Oh, yeah. I see right here it says two viewing angles.
that's good. Notice that font. Wait, look at the two viewing angles.
Yeah, is this the return of Comic Sans?
Marker felt. I don't know what we were debating that, but all of their slides during the presentation used that too. We're like, that's a funny font. It's hard to read too.
It's not a good choice, but I guess it makes it more human scale, maybe. Yeah. It looks like handwriting, doesn't it? It's funny how Apple just does stuff like that, and then we all go, what does that mean? What could that mean? Why is it? I got marker felt, but it's not marker felt.
It's criminology. Move to Cupertino.
Yeah, move to Cupertino. Look who's on the wall waving when the tanks go by. I'm very excited. I think these iPads, I'm particularly interested in the power in these iPads. I really feel like Apple is... This is where all the R&D is going, folks. Look at the MacBook Air and look at the iPad Pro. Where is the R&D going? You tell me. Look at the Mac Mini.
You can put more air into that balloon than you can with an actual laptop running a desktop operating system. When you're creating everything to work together, the level of performance you can get is astronomical. I can't wait to see 6 or 7 months from now when we're seeing apps that really take advantage of all the power that are in the new iPads. They're already the greatest productivity suite, the professional suite you can find on any mobile device or any tablet. But once you have the developers saying, you know, that idea that we had that, boy, if Apple ever made a screaming fast tablet that was this crazy stupid fast, way more stupid fast than anybody who just wants to read comic books and post to Facebook, whatever need. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to build that app right now.
And that was the conclusion Anantech came to when they benchmarked the iPhone XS, is that this is really so much power. It's so much more than it needs. This is about headroom. This is about being able to handle a lot more. And I hope developers take advantage of that.
Augmented reality is not a lightweight task, and they want to make it actually work really, really great. It's not just a tech demo. This is going to be something that is going to be wired into so much of the user interface, so much of the experience. And it's not just creating great graphics that overlay onto real reality. It's about being able to do so much math on the fly that makes sense of a scene and make sure that it positions things correctly. So, yeah, I mean, there is no more fascinating company than Apple when you see that this is not just really, really a fast computer. It is a suspiciously fast computer.
Suspiciously fast. That's a very good way to put it. RF2020 says they dressed the Mac line up just enough to look good at the funeral. Ooh. Ouch. That hurts, although I can't completely disagree. All right. Anything else to say about the event? There were no AirPods. There was no power mat or whatever they're calling that thing.
No iMac.
No Mac Pro.
Andy, did you get to actually play around with Apple Pencil?
Yep.
Yeah, tell us about the gestures.
Tell me about the double click, the double tap. That's what I want to know about.
Yeah. There's only one area, and it can be assigned by the developer, but it is only a one-tap area. They can't, the developer can't create it so that it looks like two taps. But for instance, they had it working in the Notes app. And so the way that was set up there was that I'm using the pencil, and if I just tap that area, if I'm just, of course, I don't have a pencil with me, but if you're,
it's the place your forefinger would be, right?
Exactly. The pencil. So if you just tap it exactly where your forefinger is going to fall, suddenly you see in the toolbar of drawing tools at the bottom of the screen, you see the eraser tool just sort of like leap up, just gently like rise up and then go back down again to let you know that, okay, now you're using the pencil is now the eraser. And so, you know, you can just erase what you want to do and then tap it again and get the pencil back.
I love that.
Such a natural thing. You would think that you would worry that maybe it's going to be hard for me to make sure that I'm tapping the right place because it's not marked. There's not like a little, different texture to let you know, but it's pretty much exactly where your finger would fall. I never failed to do it. Realize that this isn't shaped like a pencil where it's like a hexagon or an octagon. There really is only one flat side to it. And if you just tap that flat side, which is where you're going to be holding it anyway, you'll get it. But the most interesting thing is that developers can do whatever they want with that tap gesture. So you're probably going to see a lot of cool stuff happening there. I love everything about the Apple Pencil. I just wish that we're going to be compatible with previous versions of the iPad.
So that's my question. Is there forward or backward compatibility? Can you use an old Apple Pencil on the new iPad Pro and vice versa?
I think they said that. Or they said...
Did they say? I didn't hear.
You said you could use the new pencil on the old iPad, I think they said.
Charging is just going to be an issue.
Yeah, you can't charge it. It's wireless charging. It's not Qi, or is it? Maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, it's more that I was thinking... You may have an old pencil that you don't really want to spend another $100 on a new pencil.
We will know this on Wednesday because
I
have a list of things to try. Yeah.
It says in the compatibility for the Apple Pencil 2 that it is compatible with the third generation 12.9-inch iPad Pro. So presumably that means it's also compatible with the 9.7 and 10.5-inch iPad Pro.
Okay.
So they've got the same technology on the inside.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah. Really, everything about it, from making it shorter to having a flat side so it doesn't roll off to the texture. I hope that they at least redesign the old Apple Pencil so that we'll get a generation that will have at least just a flat side to it and this new texture to it, because everything about it is just wonderful.
So you can now tilt for shading. That was something that they couldn't do before. You've got pressure sensitivity and tilting. And then they mentioned... gestures, and I don't know, they've used the word gestures several times, but I don't know what that means when it comes to, and they don't seem to be saying what it means when it comes to the pencil.
From what I was using, I believe they're referring to how ordinarily you're used to just using the pencil to draw lines in a container that's designed to accept lines. If you want to tap things with it, if you want to move things with it, if you want to interact with the user interface with it, I imagine that you will be able to. I didn't try this, but from what they were talking to me about today and the things I was trying out, I would imagine that the first thing I would try is to see if I can bring in the app switcher just by moving the pencil into the using it as my fingertip.
They also showed, I thought it was quite interesting, using, I think it was Photoshop, if you put your thumb on the screen, the pencil functionality changes. So without your thumb on the screen, it's drawing. When you put your thumb on the screen, they dragged an object. So maybe that's what they mean.
It's a little bit weird. Remember that as much as I like Keynote for the iPad, there's so many power moves that you can actually grab multiple things and sort of keep your thumb on one and sort of like pull other things off the screen into this pile, then move it. And that's just not naturally the way that I think of things. And that's I wasn't unimpressed with the Photoshop demo, but it didn't look as though they completely rearticulated Photoshop into a brand new iPad context. It does look like they gave Photoshop a new user interface that shows. It feels like someone whose native language is mouses and trackpads who is trying to learn a tourist version of "Donde está el cuarto de baño" when they go on vacation. meaning it's effective, but it doesn't look like naturally what someone who is a developer of multi-touch apps would create if they wanted to create something as powerful as Photoshop on the iPad. I hope it's not all about these. And to do a copy and paste, you simply put your thumb here, play a version of Twister with your fingers, left finger blue, right finger red, and then twist like this. And then that's how you change the color palette.
I think it's going to behoove us to spend some time. I maybe just kind of use the iPad Pro exclusively for a while to try to learn these new modalities. I mean, and I, Andy, come from old school computer users, and maybe young people just think of it differently. And maybe if we spend some time with it, we can learn a new way of behaving. I don't know.
I didn't forget my WordStar command shift key when I used the MacBook.
Control KS will never die, let me tell you.
Yep. So I was just at the Jamf Nation User Conference, and they had a presentation by some high school teachers who were putting together a one-to-one iPad program, largely to replace graphing calculators, which was a wonderful, wonderful thing. Old 1990s technology that is still around.
Oh, yeah. But our kids still has to buy an HP graphing calculator.
Precisely, yeah. Not anymore if you go to Sewanuck High School in Long Island. The question came up of, were they, providing keyboards with all these iPads in the one-to-one? And they said, no, they weren't. And and the guy says, you and I, adults, we all think the keyboard is absolutely essential. The kids don't care.
Yeah.
They're splitting the keyboard and thumb typing their essays. And he's like, it drives us nuts. But that's what they're doing.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. Let's take a break. And unless there's anything else from the event, because I have other a potpourri of other Apple news to mention. Anything else from the event? I think that the bottom line is, it's great to see new stuff from Apple. I was very gratified to see new Macs from Apple. But I think very clearly it's clear where the future is from Apple's point of view. And it is not in Macintosh.
Well, it's where their heart lies, I think.
Yeah.
Also, it's nice to hear Lana Del Rey. It's been a while since we had a musical finale for one of these shows. So I'm an old person. I didn't know who she was, but she sang real.
You don't know who Lana Del Rey is?
Hey, I actually know who Lana Del Rey is.
You can't be
that
old. I feel
better for once. I thought
it was Dolores Del Rio for a minute there. That's all.
I knew you'd be happy though that in the film at the beginning they featured Dave Grohl. Using a Mac to work on
also
his music.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda using an iPad. That's right.
And Oprah.
A bunch of other famous people, actually. Yeah. They were going by so fast I couldn't identify them all. So somebody just went to order an iPad Pro 11. I love her in our chat room. He says shipping is now November 16th. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't get on the gravy train right away, already they're moving the shipping dates out by a little bit. That's
so they said. So they said a lot of things that a lot of people were very excited to hear.
Apparently so.
Take away from that.
Apparently so. Yeah, I'm glad I got it right away. I will have review units of all of the above. the Mini, the MacBook Air, the iPad 11, and the iPad 12.9 Wednesday. As will anybody else who ordered right away, and the rest of you, well, you just have to wait a little bit. Lori Gill is here, imore.com. She's managing editor there, Appaholic on the Twitter. Lori in the house.
Hey, that's me.
Hey, guys. Also, Mr. Andy Inatko from Public Radio in Boston, WGBH. Oh, I threw you, and now Adam.
I'm in much better shape than you think.
Tidbits, yes. Yeah. Adam looks so damn buff. I just hate you, Adam. Running and running and running. You do not have the belt problem that I and Andy have. Belts have failed us for so long. Our pants sliding down to our ankles at the most embarrassing moments, or worse, hiked up to just below the nipple so that they'd stay. You need slide belts from Brig Taylor, the brand new. Rethink your belt. Belts, here's the problem. Belts, simply enough, they don't have enough holes. You got a few holes, and if that's not an exact fit, well, too bad. Slide belt solves that problem. Here's a slide belt. This is a beautiful chrome twit buckle. They have a variety of buckles. This is a vegan leather belt, but you can get canvas, you can get hand-tooled leather, you can get a variety of different buckles. I'll show you antique brass. I'll show you the utility buckle. So you cut the belt if you want to shorten it. You put it in here. There we go. I'm going to put it in the right way round. Otherwise, the slide won't work. I learned that through a hard experience. So let's lock this into place. Now we have a lovely belt. And by the way, that means it's very easy to change the belt. Have one buckle that goes on different belts. It's kind of like an Apple Watch in that respect. Now listen carefully as I put on my slide belt. The beauty of the slide belt is the ratchet technology. It's patented. Gives you an almost infinite variety of adjustments. That's the sound I hear every morning. And then after dinner, when I want to loosen the belt, fortunately, that part is virtually silent. Slide belt fits in 32 different ways. This is a patented ratchet mechanism that makes it the most comfortable belt, the most effective belt you've ever had. And, you know, even somebody like you, Adam, who has no belly at all, I bet you also have no hips. And so belts are sometimes a little bit challenging as well, right?
Yep.
Here's the slide belt. This is kind of, I call this the Cub Scout version with the antique brass buckle and the blue canvas. They have a variety of styles and prices for everybody. They also have narrow belts for women, which is great. Colorful belts for kids and for the outdoorsman. Here is the survival belt. Now,
tactical belt.
It is basically the tactical belt. This is Andy's belt. So look at this buckle. By all appearances, a completely normal buckle, except for the fact it has built in a very sharp, very useful knife with a good point and bottle opener. It also has a flashlight, an LED, very bright, by the way, LED flashlight. Look at that. And a fire starter. Okay, you're laughing, but when you're out in the woods and you need a fire starter, you need a flashlight, you need to be able to chop some kindling, you'll be glad to have your survival belt. Actually, this belt would be...
Take your belt off so your pants will fall down while you're doing this.
Well, that's a good point. I didn't really think about that. I probably
but
wouldn't.
If you're trying to survive, you don't care about
you
what
don't
your
care
pants
about
are
your
doing.
Pants. That's right. you make a good point. You don't want to open the knife while your pants are on. That would be
or the flashlight.
Yeah, well, you could use the flashlight. You just have to aim your waist. So, no, the flashlight is removable, so you can use it as you wish.
Okay.
This is I love this. Actually, this would be a great groomsman's gift, right? If you've got a wedding party coming up, great holiday gifts too. Check out their gift set tabs at slidebelts.com/twit for some great offers. Do note, though, those special offers are not eligible for our huge discount code, but you're getting a pretty good discount when you go there anyway. I love slide belts. I wear my slide belt all the time. I love it. I have one that says twit on it. So if I forget who I am, I could just look at my belt and I go, oh, I'm a twit. Slide belts are worn casually around the house, at the office. They're perfect for date night. A great travel belt because they're so easy to take off while going through security and so easy to put back on. And if you're still not convinced, Slide Belt offers a one-year warranty, free exchanges, and no-hassle returns. Slidebelts.com, slidebeltsplural.com/twit. Slide belts are awesome. If you use the offer code TWIT at checkout, you'll get 20% off your order. Do your holiday shopping now. Be ready. Slidebelts.com/twit. If you use the offer code TWIT at checkout, you'll get 20% off your order. Then you could say, honey, I'm going to give you a belt for Christmas. Slidebelts.com/twit. I love these. Get them engraved with more than just the word twit, by the way. Anything you want on there. And in survival mode, anything is possible. Slide belts.
Don't worry, I can start us a fire, a huge fire. Let me just get my belt off.
Oh, we're having some fun. Let's see. There actually was quite a bit of news. Blackmagic took the occasion to announce an update to their Blackmagic eGPU. Unfortunately, the eGPU that I purchased with the Radeon 560 in it is not upgradable. But they have now announced a new eGPU with a much more powerful GPU in it, the Vega RX. So that is a huge thing. It is the eGPU uses the Type-C connector, so and works with all Mojave computers. So it would presumably go with any of these new Macs, including the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air. It's a Vega RX Vega 56. There's the name, the RX Vega 56, which is apparently, I'm not up on the Radeon graphics GPUs, but that's apparently a much better one. Adam, are you familiar with it?
I am not. However, there was a tiny little mention slipped into Apple's PR, and I did notice this in the specs, that the MacBook Pro 15 is now configurable with a Radeon Pro Vegas.
Ah!
I just snuck that right in.
They slipstreamed some stuff in. That's good.
Yeah. And it's only the 15, but there was a Radeon Pro Vega 16 and 20, I think, or both options. I didn't get a chance to look at the prices, but just, those people who really care about their GPUs.
The original version had the Radeon Pro 580. I'm sorry, it's a 560 that was in the laptop, the 580 in the eGPU. It had 8 gigs of GDDR5. That was $700. The new eGPU Pro is a little more expensive. It's $1,200. It's MacBook Air cost, $1,200. But we'll work with any Thunderbolt 3 enabled Mac. So if you, we use the eGPU, but we use it more as a dock. It's very handy for docking my, when I get to work, docking my stuff in. What else? I just closed the window. Let me reopen my window. By the way, that new eGPU Pro is not yet in stores, but apparently Blackmagic says soon. You didn't see anybody from Bloomberg at the event, did you, Andy? Apparently they were uninvited.
I did see a very suspicious looking horse with a lens that keeps sticking out of its mouth.
Retaliation for the Bloomberg Supermicro story. Apparently, Amazon pulled fourth quarter ads from Bloomberg Business Week. Apple, it's kind of a little less significant, did not invite them to the event. But I know how that feels. I don't feel punished. It's okay.
It's like inviting Cher to your birthday party. You figure she gets so many invitations, why bother her with another invitation she can't take? That's probably what they're thinking about you.
So I've had iPhone XR since it came on Friday. This is the less expensive. Some people are calling it the iPhone 9. The successor to the iPhone 8 that Apple never released comes in 6 colors. This is, as you can see, a beautiful product red. I have to say it's gorgeous.
Still has that color.
Isn't it pretty? There's also a coral. There's a light blue, black, white, and a banana phone yellow, which I couldn't bring myself to buy. Although I think, who bought banana phone? Somebody we know bought the banana phone. This is the, you wanted the banana phone, didn't you, Lori?
I do want the banana. I already bought the 10S though, so no banana phone for me, but I love that color.
I do too. Aluminum, not stainless. It's slippery, and with the glass back, inevitably you're going to put this in a case, so maybe the color doesn't matter all that much. It's got the liquid retina display that Apple's put on the new iPad Pros, and frankly, very close in color rendition and quality to the OLED displays of the iPhone XS and XS Max. The size is interesting. It's kind of halfway between the XS and XS Max. So it's, for some, it might be the just right size. You are giving up, besides the OLED screen, you're giving up the dual cameras. You can see on the back, it only has one camera. It's kind of like an iPad, has only one camera, which means you don't get the optical telephoto, the 2X, and you also don't get some of the additional features that the second lens provides. For instance, in portrait mode, I don't get the blackout version where you could take the background out entirely. But the camera is still very good, and the front-facing camera is identical, so you could do all the same portrait stuff with the selfie cam. At $750 for a 64-gig version, I thought this was pretty good. I suspect a lot of people will choose the XR as their 2018 iPhone. I think it's a nice phone. No force touch. Okay. No force touch.
Sort of the perfect phone for almost everyone.
Right. Does anybody mind not having force touch?
Yeah, you know, I was talking with Renee about that. He uses Force Touch a lot. So he specifically feel like he was missing out on it. But most people, it's the 10R uses long press, and right. it has a haptic feedback on for certain long press things. So it feels like you're force pressing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're kind of getting the same aesthetic by using it that way. Anyway,
well, just to give you some sense. I forgot entirely that it didn't have 3D touch. Completely.
Do you use trackpad mode when typing? That's the one thing I do with Force Touch on the Titan.
Oh, let me see. Where
you kind of press hard on the keyboard and you get into trackpad mode.
Yeah.
You can probably do a long press. I think you can press on the space bar, I think, now.
Yeah, it does. You're right. It does not. It doesn't do the long press. Doesn't work. Yeah. You have to. Okay. So it does work, but you have to
mash the
long
the
press
bar.
The space bar, and but with the haptic, it feels like almost like you pushed it in, and now you have the trackpad mode.
Yeah.
So
that's the fat finger. That's the that, for those of us who have fat fingers.
Fat finger
that's
mode.
the trick to get a cursor actually where you want it.
Yeah. I do use that a lot. Again, I didn't even notice that it didn't have 3D touch. It's like, oh, you're right, it doesn't. Because the haptics are strong enough that it kind of almost feels like something happened there. I can't see any reason not to get this. It probably has the longest battery life of any iPhone. It's got the biggest battery of all the iPhones except for the XS Max. And with a slightly smaller screen, it might actually get better battery life than the XS Max. So 3D touch is not force touch. Okay. I don't know the difference, apparently. What else? Apple owes Qualcomm $7 billion, according to Qualcomm. Good luck collecting that money. Here's a story from...
You know, my next door neighbor owes me $7 million, too. So,
Good
you know.
Luck. Yeah. Uh-huh. Seven.
And Apple has it on the couch anyway. So.
Billion dollars.
A billion. I don't even
want to get into this fight because it's just endless. So, you know, you could do your own research. Visit your local public library, kids, and read all about it.
In the middle of a patent dispute, correct?
Yes.
I'm assuming that that's the situation, and this is such a funny analogy to use, but if you're having a dispute with your landlord, you're allowed to not pay rent until they fix the issue, but you have to be saving that rent money to pay it when it's time, and you have to show evidence that you actually are setting aside that money to pay it, even if you're not going to pay it until they fix it. I think when I first read this, that's immediately what I thought was, well, Apple's just, they're just saving that rent money until this dispute is over to decide whether or not they have to pay it. But they're holding on to it. They just haven't paid it yet.
Yeah. Fair enough. Apple Watch and fall detection credited with saving a man in Sweden with acute back pain.
Oh, how did it solve the back pain?
Gustavo, 34, suffered a sudden back injury, fell paralyzed to the kitchen floor. It felt like someone... I should do this in a Swedish accent. It felt like someone pushed a knife into my back, he says. That's not a Swedish accent. I don't know what that is. Luckily, his watch responded... This is according to Swedish publication Aftonbladet. This is the translation. On Friday, Gustavo Rodriguez stood by the stove as usual and cooked food. Suddenly, he felt strange tension in his back, and it became increasingly difficult to move the body. Gustavo tried not to think about it. But then I moved the frying pan, and it hit me. It felt like someone pushed a knife into my back. He fell. It's terrible, Leo. Knock it off. He fell to the floor. He fell to the floor. The pain was so strong that everything went black. He could not move. Then the watch chimed and asked, "Do you want to call 112?" My Apple Watch had sensed the fall and wondered if I should make an emergency call. He said he managed to crawl across the floor to the living room and climb to the couch. But his phone was in another room. He hadn't recovered from the pain yet. He managed to call his mother-in-law from the Apple Watch. So anyway, he didn't actually use the phone, the thing to call him emergency services. But he could have.
Yeah, and he did use the Apple Watch to call
his
someone
mom.
In his family.
Yeah.
So it didn't call emergency services for him, but I mean, he had a back injury. He didn't need emergency services.
Absolutely.
But he didn't have to crawl around on the floor finding his iPhone. He just used his Apple Watch to call his mom.
Here is another story. Quick-thinking Apple intern uses Apple Watch as logging tool during in-flight emergency. So from Central Michigan University comes the story of Brian Shear. He was on a plane ride from Arizona to D.C. when soon after takeoff, the woman sitting in front of him passed out. Shear, along with an internal medicine physician and a lifeguard, boy, she was on the right flight, jumped out of their seats and started working on her. Shear pulled off his Apple Watch, put it on the woman to monitor her pulse. When the plane landed, he gave the watch to emergency technicians so doctors could have her pulse data from the flight. And here's the happy ending. That's when I decided that I want to go to medical school. I want to be the one using the latest technology and be a part of pushing it forward, not the one making and selling it. So he quit Apple, and he started the CMU College of Medicine, interned at the Yale Cancer Center, and he created an ebook, a 56-page informational binder for brain tumor patients. Happy, happy ending. There he is. There's Dr. Shear, soon to be. I don't know why the name on his coat says something else, but anyway, maybe he borrowed somebody's coat. I don't know. It seems like he's got a different name. He's a trainee. It says trainee. That's it. So the first name's right. Anyway, okay. Good news from the Copyright Office. Maybe I'm a little punchy. I have been here since 7 in the morning, right, Lori?
Yeah, I know. I've literally been working since 6:15 a.m. I've been behind a computer working since 6:15. Just enough time to get a cup of coffee straight to work.
Yep. I'm on my fourth. Copyright Office has, thanks to good work from these folks right here, Sorek of the Cydia Android Store, Cynthia Riplogel and Kyle Weens of iFixit, Corey Doctorow, Kit Walsh, and Catherine Tarenda-Costa, and Mitch Stoltz from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They prepared a long brief for the Copyright Board, and won their final ruling released this week. Goes into effect immediately. It's okay to fix your phone, kids. You can now jailbreak Alexa-powered hardware and other similar gadgets, voice assistant devices. You can unlock new phones, not just used ones. There is a general exemption from the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Remember, the DMCA prevents reverse engineering copy protection. But now, with this exemption, you can repair smartphones, home appliances, home systems, or any other home device or motorized land vehicles, but not your boat or airplane.
They better add car to that.
Well, motorized land vehicles, that's a car?
I don't know. I think they should add car to that.
Maybe just to be specific. Of course, it was John Deere tractor owners that were upset that John Deere wouldn't let them repair their own tractors. But you now have the right to do so. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, it's now legal for third parties to perform repairs on behalf of the owners. So this was a big, big ruling from the Copyright Office, meaning that the rules... the DMCA that prevent you from fixing stuff that is copy protected do not apply to those specific devices.
Although the problem that still remains is just because you are allowed to doesn't mean it's easy.
Yeah, you still have to get the repair manuals and the parts, right? Yeah.
Well, and you have to break the DRM in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah. You know, that doesn't seem that hard.
You just download something from the internet.
Seems like there's people doing that. I don't know. It could be wrong.
A lot of these cool rulings are about exemptions to being able to break DRM. One of the more interesting ones was now if games that were like server-based games that you had to connect to a server in order to work, it is now not illegal to get those games running again. But it all is conditional upon you finding a server that has the game on it. Is now no longer illegal to get that box running and put it back on the internet so that your client apps can play that game again.
As long as you had it legally. But this is good for the Internet Archives that has been archiving games that are no longer supported. It's one thing to get a ROM from, Donkey Kong, but the stuff that needs a server and the servers are gone, that's a considerable challenge. Yep. And that actually is going to save things. You know, when World of Warcraft is no longer playable because the Blizzard doesn't run a server anymore in the year 2020, 8 or whatever, you'll still be able to. And I think it's important for historians. Even it's art, right? This is a creation.
It's culture. Imagine if it were impossible to ever play this, hear the song "Ain't Misbehavin'" because the software that was required to play that song no longer exists, and the CPU the software was written for doesn't exist. But you can emulate it so easily.
Yeah.
And so that's why you're happy that it's the Library of Congress, emphasis on the word library, that they're very, very partial to the idea of preserving culture and information, and saying that they're applying the no harm done rule very, very liberally every time that they come up with one of these reviews. So, like, if you're going to complain that this game that you wrote in 1983 and haven't stopped supporting in 1986, that someone is creating an emulator that will let you run it and distribute it, you know what? You're going to have to just accept that there is no harm done by this, and you're just going to be happy that your work continues to live on.
I apologize. There was one announcement at the event I didn't make mention of, and that is that iOS 12.1 is out.
Oh, right, 12.1.
We can now all install it. I installed it right after the event. You can now FaceTime up to 32 people at once. That's why we had to buy the new Mac Mini and 16.
Apple also released 10.14.1 on watchOS 5.1 and tvOS 12.1. So I just didn't mention anything about those.
But. All new
and,
OSs.
The shortcuts app 2.1.
The shortcuts app.
All kinds of new stuff.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. Let's just quickly mention that you now have a whole bunch of new emoji, 70 new emoji.
Woohoo!
Woo, including a properly conceived bagel, a cooked lobster, as Andy is quick to point out, a ball of yarn, a lacrosse stick, and a mosquito.
And I think also a lot of emoji of people with disabilities are also in this collection.
Yes, and that's really good. There is a depth control now in your camera. So this is something they've showed before, but you can automatically adjust the depth of field in a real-time preview. Used to be able to only do it after the fact, but I guess you can now do it while you're taking
right in the
picture.
Camera.
That's great.
Yeah, I like that idea. I usually adjust that afterward, but I like that you can kind of play with that before you even take the picture, make sure that the lighting is good and stuff like that.
Yeah. And your phone, your new phones, the XS, XS Max, and iPhone XR, have all had dual SIM support physically, but now the operating system also supports it. So that's good news. And as you mentioned, Shortcuts 2.1. Now, this won't come with iOS 12.1. You'll have to download it. In fact, Shortcuts doesn't come with iOS. So go to the App Store if you don't already have it, install it. And it has a whole bunch of, you know, new things you can incorporate in Shortcuts, including get current weather, get current forecast, create alarm, toggle alarm, start timer, the new measurement and convert measurement actions, get last import action for getting the most recent set of imported photos. So there's quite a few new features. I anticipate this will be a regular thing with Shortcuts. This is one maybe that's bit you that would be useful when running a shortcut from your HomePod using Siri. The media will now automatically play back from the HomePod using AirPlay. So for some of you, that's been a stopping point in Shortcuts. Shortcuts is great. Everybody play with it, use it, try it. And the easiest way to do that is to look at the shortcuts that your apps provide. Some apps do that in their settings. Sometimes it's in the Siri and Shortcuts setting in the settings app. But boy, I've been doing all sorts of interesting things with the Shortcuts. In fact, I would like to recommend that you follow the subreddit, the Shortcuts subreddit on reddit.com, because there's so many. And they've created a wiki there. There's so many useful shortcuts that you wouldn't even expect would be possible. And it's always fun to try new ones. And it's actually not too hard. Most of the time what they do in this subreddit is they put their shortcuts on, I think I'm on the wrong one. Maybe it's shortcut singular. Anyway, they put their shortcuts on Dropbox, and then you can download it, which just makes it very easy. No, it's /r/shortcuts. /r/shortcuts. Very, very good. I think very useful. All right. Have we anything else to report? Oh, missed a couple of big ones. Apple has been getting reportedly $3 billion a year from Google for making Google the default search engine for Safari on iOS and macOS devices. According to Business Insider, that number will rise to $12 billion next year.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of cabbage.
Google makes a lot, though. They get, well, I mean, $12 billion, that's cash change.
It's clearly worth it with Apple's U.S. Market share in iOS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
According to this analyst note, Apple users outpunch their weight when it comes to how much they use Google and click on search ads. Of all Google search ad clicks in the third quarter, almost half came from iOS and macOS. This is according to Merkle.
We're suckers for ads. Who knew?
You guys love ads. $12 billion. Wow. Who knew?
And the interesting thing is that all comes, that's in accounting, it's all comes under services.
Right.
So the next time you think that, wow, their cloud services are, their new file storage is
right.
Working. Well, no, there's a lot of ways that they're making money with services. And one of them
just
is
just
saying,
yeah.
The nice search engine you got. You'd be ashamed if no iPhone could connect to it.
And finally, if you're looking for something to do with your cheese grater Mac, how about making a bench out of it? Stylish benches. Stylish benches.
A designer. In my backyard.
Yeah. It's good looking.
Use G4s for coffee tables.
It's very solid, I might add. This is a designer named GTO. He adds a slab of American black walnut that fits perfectly into the notch.
He cuts a piece of wood. I mean, let's face it. He cut a piece of wood.
Each bench is made to order. Lead time 6 weeks because they have to get G5 cases in the best possible condition. $2,555 and the computers are non-functional. However,
do you get a discount if you donate your old G5?
Apparently not, because it's only about $100 for a G5 case on eBay. So maybe it's the wood that's that expensive. You could do it yourself. Yeah.
Nope. I've got one as a side table on my reading chair in the living room.
Yeah.
That's what it used to be serving files, and now it's just holding up my beverage as I read.
It's serving you drinks.
Yeah.
It could still serve you drinks, and it could actually keep them warm if you plugged it in and kept it running.
Just overclock it, yeah.
To this date, no one has figured out anything to do with the current Mac Pro trash can design. You really don't want to sit on it.
Other than a trash can.
It makes a wonderful doorstop.
Well, you know what? Someone is going to be clever enough to put that into a potato can and just build a potato can and the right diameter to use that as a slug.
They're shooting Mac Pros at us. All right, let's take a break. Get ready. Your picks of the week coming up next as we wrap up this very special Mac Break Weekly. Adam Engst, if you don't subscribe to Tidbits, you are missing on the best Mac newsletter out there, tidbits.com. It's free, but you really ought to help Adam and Tanya do their job by paying for a premium subscription. That's what I do. Tidbits.com. Anything else you want to plug, Adam?
That's the main thing I'm doing these days, apart from Tidbits Content Network. We're providing syndicated content to Apple professionals, so consultants, resellers, whatnot, people who need to have a blog or an email newsletter but don't have the time to write it themselves.
You'll find it a link right at the top at tidbits.com.
TCN.tidbits.com. Yep, right there.
Very nice. Mr. Andy Inako, coming to us directly from some room in Brooklyn with a picture of New York behind him.
With a beautiful scene.
Again, if I weren't spending so much time trying to get this computer to work with Skype and this network, I would have arranged it so that it would be a perfect backdrop.
Just this close. You'll hear Andy every week on WGBH in Boston, Boston Public Radio, and of course here on Mac Break Weekly. Don't forget his Material podcast, where he covers Android. On the replay network, replay.fm. And Lori Gill singing at a rock and roll venue near you.
It's funny, I am.
When's the next show?
On Saturday night, I'll be playing at Bender's in San Francisco if anybody wants to go see me scream my heart out.
Oh, how exciting. She's currently Gory Kill on Twitter, but Appaholic.
Everybody's changed. They've got their Halloween or their scary name right now, and I couldn't resist.
That's a good one.
I went ahead and I thought so too.
Did they call you that in high school?
No, I got called Snorri in high school, actually.
Snorri?
Yeah, or no, it wouldn't have been high school. They were over that by high school. It was elementary school that
kids
I was getting called
so
Snorri.
Rude. I think Gory Kill is a great nickname.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. I might have to change my stage name to Gory Kill.
I like it.
Your zombie name.
Yeah.
You need to, you need to definitely do a goth band so you can use that name.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. You find a Gory at imore.com where she's managing editor and soon to be the boss when she deposes Renee Ritchie.
Yes, exactly. Now we'll eat his brains.
Yeah, Gory Kill brains. We are brought to you today by WordPress. Actually, my blog has been brought to you by WordPress. I just got my badge and my WordPress app that I have been 12 years at WordPress.com. I've been using WordPress even longer. Isn't that nice? I love WordPress, and I'm not alone. 32% of all the websites you visit on the internet are running on WordPress. That'll tell you something. That's like a third almost of all the internet is powered by WordPress. That's because WordPress is the best content management system out there. If you don't have a place to call your own on the web, as an individual or even more importantly as a business, you absolutely have to go and get your account at WordPress.com. At WordPress, there are no limits. You can create the ultimate online hub that's yours, not Mr. Zuckerberg's, not Mr. Jack's. It's yours with room to grow. And, of course, all the content that's there is your content. You can upload images, video, audio, and more. Import and export content to and from your WordPress site. It's your site, your home, your content, and you got to have that. You could still have the Facebook feed and the Twitter feed and all that stuff, but you got to have a place that you own that's yours, and that's WordPress.com. Choose from hundreds of designs so you can match your vision, establish your brand. You don't have to have any design or engineering experience. Let WordPress do it all for you. They take care of the hosting, the security, the software updates. You focus on what you do best. Create your content. Put your album up there. Put your art up there. Your poetry. Talk about your business. Get testimonials. You even have people with their social bookmarking link back to their Facebook and Twitter to help promote your site. You get built-in search engine optimization. You get marketing tools. And I love the WordPress app. When we were traveling, it was how I posted. It made it so easy to do. You can also manage comments directly from there. WordPress is the best, has the best anti-spam content engine ever, called Akismet. I love it and I use it. You can also look at your statistics in the app so you can see how you're doing. And I love the notifications I get. Somebody just added your page, liked your page. Somebody just added a comment. It makes you feel like you're not writing in a space, that you're actually, people are reading what you do. And of course, if at any time you need help, they've got a great support team 24/7 to help you when you need it. Very affordable. Plans start at just $4 a month. Find out how you can get involved. Go to WordPress.com/MacBreak right now. Create your website. Soon you'll get your 12-year badge. I love WordPress. My WordPress site is leolaporte.com if you want to take a look at it. It's where I put my pictures. I don't use social media anymore. WordPress is my media. WordPress.com/MacBreak. 15% off, by the way, if you go there on your brand-new website. WordPress.com/MacBreak. All right, Adam Engst, here's your chance. A pick of the week.
Pick of the week. So I think Andy mentioned a while back, in June sometime, that the Libby app from Overdrive, which you can use to borrow books from your local public library. And yeah. I use Libby. Libby's absolutely great. Use it with the New York Public Library. But there's actually another app that the Finger Lakes Library System here in Ithaca uses called Hoopla. If you go to hoopladigital.com, and it's roughly the same principle in terms of, you know, big catalog of books and movies and music and things that you can borrow. And it's a little bit different, at least here, in the sense that you can borrow a limited number of things per month, but you it's not quite this, you know, you don't get as anything you want. But the thing that really sets it apart, and I think Andy might appreciate this, is they actually have a really large selection of comics. You know, comics are one of those things which drive me nuts because I read really quickly. And so I just, you know, I can't kind of get around to buying a comic because I will read it in 10 minutes. And so I really like the collections, and they have collections and collections and collections. So I'm sort of working my way through, you know, like, I don't know, 40 collections of Invincible, and been really enjoying it. And it's, again, not something that I would probably have done unless I could have tried it from the library, and Hoopla makes that possible. So definitely worth checking out to see if your public library supports it. But if it does, download a copy and see what you can get.
Very nice. What's the URL?
HooplaDigital.com.
HooplaDigital.com. I just like saying it.
Hoopla.
Hoopla Digital.
Hoopla. You gotta get go hoopla, you know.
Hoopla. Andy Inoko, pick of the week, sir.
I have to abstain courteously because I was so busy trying to solve a problem with my MacBook yesterday that I did not choose an item.
What happened to your MacBook?
Oh, the SSD decided to go home to Jesus. It can't be found by the operating system.
Oh no!
The only solution was to prepare an external boot disk. Obviously I'm going to replace it, and once it's out of this device, I can actually try to troubleshoot it and see what happened to it and how I can get it back. It's an SSD, which means that it's always in a course of degrading. Sometimes you just get a bad fall of the dice, and it turns out that it hits a boot sector or it hits a part of the device that makes it impossible to actually be recognized by the rest of it. It was terrible because I went to bed with a functioning MacBook on my desk, and then in the morning I woke it up, and then it just decided that
we shall gather at the river.
Sounds like a new SSD is your pick of the week.
But it's replaceable, right? Because I know, I mean, some of these devices.
Yeah, that's so. Maybe my pick of the week is iFixit, as usual. Whenever something bad happens to your Mac, you can at least go to iFixit.com and find out that, okay, this is not a difficult thing to fix. And, oh, look, the component is not that expensive either. And, of course, because I have a recent backup of everything, at worst I've lost... There may be a couple of files that I've touched in the past 3 days that haven't been backed up. So no big deal. Just more annoying that on a day when I really wanted to be sleeping in advance of being able to go to New York and spend an entire day being a pundit, that I was trying to get a Mac that looked... It's a Mac-shaped object into a functional Macintosh.
Well, I wish you the best.
Mankind is born into trouble just as surely as the sparks fly upward.
Yes. I mean, didn't you just... I mean, you spilled Coke into your last one, and you just bought that like 2 years ago?
3 years ago. It was like a late 2015 model. And believe me, the first thing I thought was, oh, no. If this Mac is busted, I'm going to have to decide whether or not to buy a brand
new MacBook.
He doesn't like that butterfly.
Well, see, the problem is now that I've said so much crap about it at this point that even if I've decided that was the best choice, there's no way I could possibly live it down. So.
You know what? I see your excuse is the 2018s are like slightly improved, and I'm completely with you. I don't like the butterfly, but it's just good enough that I can use it. I've been using the 2018.
Yeah, I have that opinion too. It's just good enough that I could maybe get by with it.
It's not ideal.
But for $1,500, I don't want a keyboard that is just a poke in the eye with a blunter stick than last year's.
The good news is I do believe you can. I know you can because I've done it. Replace the SSDs in the 2015s. They're actually fairly easy to do. In fact, if you need any help, let me know. But it's just a question of a screwdriver, about 18 little tiny screws on the back, and you're in. Not a hard thing to do.
Your go pick over to the house. We'll pop some corn. We'll talk about boys. And we'll fix our recipe.
Lori Gill, your pick of the week.
We were talking about using the new iPad Pro as a second screen. So it made me think of the Luna display, which turns your iPad into a second screen for your iPad or for your MacBook.
Yeah, because Duet's, as far as I can tell, Duet hasn't worked in a while. Luna does, though, huh?
I was using Duet just not that long ago.
Really?
After the iOS 12 update, and it was working. Oh, okay. So I don't know.
Okay, I'll have to try again. So Luna, tell us about that Luna display.
It's this little thing. It's a tiny little dongle.
It's hardware.
It's hardware, and it's only slightly larger than the USB-C port itself. You plug it into your Mac or MacBook Pro or MacBook Air now. And it creates a wireless connection with your iPad, and it has a really very minimal lag, which there are other, there are apps out there that allow you to wirelessly, connect from your, Mac to your iPad. But this one is much, much better because it's a physical piece of hardware. They use what they call liquid technology, which I'm not exactly sure the details of it and why it helps, but it does improve a lot. And through testing myself, it has a little bit of lag. It's not as perfect as they want you to believe it to be, but it's a very, very small amount of lag. So you can definitely work on your iPad as if it were a second screen to your MacBook very, very easily. So that, you know, just made me think of that for people who aren't getting the new iPad Pro, who aren't, ready to jump on board with that kind of massive technology. For $80, you can get a little dongle that will turn your iPad into a second screen for your MacBook.
Oh, isn't this sweet?
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, because Duet is wired. So,
yes. All right. Yes. Which cool. I Duet actually has it's better. The performance is better, but it is wired. So there you lose that kind of pliability and portability when you have to plug them into each other.
Lori Gill, we love you. Thank you for being here. Managing editor, iMore. Come back any day. I always say that. Thank you for.
Well, I swear Renee's brain, it's going to be eaten very soon. I'm hungry.
What's your costume tomorrow?
I wore my costume over the weekend. I think I talked about it last week. I was a member of Metalocalypse.
How'd it go?
We dress up for the big party over the weekend. It went well. We did good. People recognized what we were. So that was
the question.
We had to be in the group.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's anyway, they're not. You have to be of a certain age to remember Metalocalypse.
Yeah. You have to know metal, or you have to
Watch Adult Swim.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of cuss words in this. I don't know if you want to.
I'm not playing the audio. Yeah. Just the pictures.
So the one with the long brown hair was the character that I played.
Did you have that kind of Fu Manchu mustache?
I did.
Oh, man.
I did. I cut some hair off of the wig and glued it directly to my face.
See, I might have to go back to social media just to see that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lori. Andy and Akko, what's your costume?
I've just finished my costume on Sunday. Tomorrow, when the trick-or-treaters come, I'm going to be man at second story window with big bucket of ice water.
Oh, that sounds so fun.
That's a very metal costume.
Thank you, Andy. You can hear him at WGBH in Boston. Thank you for going through all the trials you went through to get on. We really appreciate it. We were very glad.
Well worth it to talk to such an August panel.
Yes.
Or even an October panel.
You ought to see us in October. That's what it's meant. And thank you to Stud Muffin, Mr. Adam Angst. God, he's looking buff. Tidbits.com. He runs 100 miles a day, and it's showing. At Adam Angst. Follow him on the Twitter. Thank you, Adam. Always a pleasure.
Glad to be here.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. We thank you for joining us. Don't forget, we did our version of the live stream, which YouTube immediately cut off for copyright violation. We're working on getting that one back, but you can still go to twit.tv/specials if you want to see the Apple event with Megan Maroney and my commentary. You can get any of our shows at twit.tv. This show is at twit.tv/MBW, and you can watch anything we do live if you know the calendar, which is at twit.tv/calendar. In the case of this show, it's Tuesdays around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Starting next week, because we're going into standard time here in the United States. So starting next week, it will be at 1900 UTC, if my math is correct. I know UTC doesn't move. We move. 1900 UTC. Please stop by twit.tv/live is the live feed, audio and video. If you do that, join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. And of course, the best way to get all of our shows, I can't say it enough, I want you to do it, please. It helps us if you subscribe. That way you'll get every episode the minute it's available. Get your favorite podcast application and subscribe to MacBreak Weekly. With that, I must say, I'm sad to say, it's time to get back to work, because break time is over. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.